Welcome, everyone, to the Infertility Feelings Podcast.
I'm scared to death to do this podcast. Like, it's 60 degrees out, which is probably not cold to most people, but it's cold for California, and I'm sweating. I have slippers on my feet, and they're just, like, wet slipper feet. Like,
oh,
I'm
gross.
Just, sorry, that is gross. But, like, I'm a little nervy.
Today, we are talking about infertility and ethics.
Wish us luck. Everyone just say a little prayer for me, actually, or some good vibes or whatever you have, because I'm, you know how I say, buckle up, buttercup? I'm saying it to myself. Like, buckle up, buttercup, here we go.
This does not have to be a scary topic, infertility and ethics, but...
That's what you keep telling me.
But it also is terrifying because it has to do with ethics, and ethics are scary. But I promise we're going to make them not scary, and this is going to be an informative time.
Keep saying we.
That is going to be great. This is going to be great.
It's going to be great.
Here we go.
Welcome back to the Infertility Feelings Podcast, your place to process, cry, and laugh about infertility. We are so happy to have you here, and we really hope you enjoy today's conversation. So, Doug, because I have no idea what we're talking about, I'm just kidding. Kind of. What do you mean by infertility and ethics?
Well, this is a podcast I've wanted to do for a long time. Because I think it's very important. When I say infertility and ethics, when we say that, what we're talking about is that infertility has to do with ethical issues. Mainly...
Just add that to the pile of already everything you have to deal with.
We're going
to
talk about, but mainly the issues of when does life begin? What can we do in terms of reproductive technologies that fall into the category of ethical? Do they all fall into the category of ethical? Are there any... reproductive practices that could be considered unethical. What we're going to do in this podcast is we're just going to look at the topic from high above it and analyze some of the different views that we can have. We are not in any way going to name what we think is ethical and unethical. We are also not going to, this is not a podcast where Jesse and I are going to show you our perspective and advocate for a certain view. What we are hopefully going to do is show you the different ways that people think about these things so that you can think more clearly yourself. But more importantly than anything else is we are going to talk about what it feels like to have to talk about infertility and ethics when you're just struggling to get pregnant. You want to get pregnant, you want to have a baby, you want to grow your family, or you're just struggling with this whole thing. What does it feel like to have to also burden yourself with all these ethical thoughts at the same time? Because that's really the heart of this podcast, is talking about feelings. We're going to connect those two things today, infertility, ethics, and feelings.
And I think that's something that we've tried to do all along in this podcast, is we try to, like, if you think this way, this is feelings that could come with that. If you feel this way, like we had this when we talked about faith. It's like,
right.
There's many, many, many different faiths all over the world. It's like we try to just make it be ambiguous for our opinion, because we want every single person to feel welcome on this podcast and nobody to feel excluded or anything like that. One of our main goals at Uniquely Knitted is for everyone to feel like they have a right at the Uniquely Knitted table. And everyone has a right to process in our process groups, on this podcast, however you want to join us at our table. And we don't want anyone to feel like they are excluded or their opinion doesn't matter or anything like that. So that's why we say that. I feel like I want to make that clear. It's like we do that on purpose.
That's right.
Because we want everyone to feel welcome at the Uniquely Knitted table and all the opinions. So we're going to take a really simple topic, you know, infertility and ethics, to bring to the Uniquely Knitted table and try to see everybody and honor everybody's opinion and everybody's process in this subject.
Uniquely Knitted is the nonprofit that puts on the Infertility Feelings podcast. And in that nonprofit, in this work and on this podcast, we care so much about feelings, about process and about communicating what your reality is and working through that and processing through all the emotions that go along with that. So we're not advocating for a certain viewpoint, but we're just talking through these things so that you can process and work through your own feelings about all of this. Obviously, if you've paid attention to the news recently, there has been some rulings and some court things have happened in court. There's been some decisions made across our country that put a lot of reproductive technologies in jeopardy. They have drawn the line sort of when they think life begins. I'm talking about the court case in Alabama. So there's things that are making this very present in our reality. I hope that you see this podcast as a tour guide to kind of what this, what's going on here. Not necessarily saying this is what we think and rah, but saying this is what's going on here. How do you feel about it?
Yeah. And if you're listening to this in 2028, it is February 1st, 2024.
I mean, great job if you're listening to this in 2028.
Yeah, exactly. I think that we have caveated enough. I hope people feel like we are just trying to do an overview and yeah. attach feeling to some of these beliefs in ethics. And that everybody is welcome here and every opinion is welcome here.
Yeah.
Because we all deserve to process this crazy journey of infertility.
Absolutely. I hope that you see our heart in this. I think it's actually a very important topic to cover right now, even.
Yeah.
While a lot of this stuff is in the news, while people are advocating, it's a very important time to cover this.
Yeah.
So let's cover it.
So let's do this. I'm ready. Hit me.
Let's begin with talking about one of the biggest issues in life. Ethics.
I'm not sure if everybody would say that.
Are you saying that people don't wake up every morning and just dream about ethics?
Yes, that is what I'm saying. I think people do inadvertently. I don't know if I have.
Whoa, Jesse, you're getting existential already.
Oh dear. But it's true. I think I make ethical decisions all the time,
yeah.
but I don't necessarily tie them to ethical decisions until I met you, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
Thanks for that.
Okay. I'm going to go there. I'll cover lots of things and I'll do them quickly. Jesse, you can stop me. If you're listening to this and you have a question, just feel free to stop me.
just mute you. Just mute. And then mute, DM me on Instagram. I'll ask you and then I'll answer it. And then you can press play again. Just kidding.
In ethics, there's kind of two sides. It's a double-sided coin, right? One side of ethics is called ethical theories.
I'm sorry to pause you already.
No, it's fine.
Are you explaining what ethics is? Like, can you get like just a smaller definition of what
yes.
we're talking about
yeah.
before you go into the differences of them?
Absolutely. I think ethics is actually a confusing topic.
I agree. I'm already confused.
Let me unconfuse it for you for a second. There are different types of ethical theories. These are theories about what's good and bad in life, the way you should live, the way things ought to be. And those are really important. We're not going to cover what they are, although please know that I wish we could. But there are different ethical theories. That's called the theory of ethics. There's something then called applied ethics, where you then take real life scenarios and you apply that theory of ethics to that real life scenario.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So if you hold one ethical theory, and this is kind of how you view things are good and bad, right and wrong, how you should make laws, how things ought to be in life. And then now you take a real life scenario and you go, okay, well, this is my ethical theory that I believe in. Now I'm going to apply that ethical theory to this certain situation that's going on in life. Does that make sense?
So do you know the definition of ethics off the top of your head?
Not off the top of my head, but it's probably going to have to do something with moral principles that dictate how we should live in life. Something like that.
Okay, let me think about that for a second. Moral principles that dictate how we live.
Right. But what I'm saying is that there are different ways to view moral principles. That's your theory of ethics.
Right. Like everyone has a different opinion.
Everyone has a different theory. Or maybe they don't even know what the theories are. That's me personally. I think we don't really know what those theories are. We kind of just have a grab bag of all
right.
sorts of things.
Right.
But there are.
Wait, did you just say your opinion, Doug?
There are very clear moral theories. applying those things to life is what's called applied ethics. So what we're going to be talking about today is not moral theory. That's a very different topic, one that is interesting in a lot of ways, but probably not interesting in this situation.
And define moral theory again.
It's a system that dictates how you view things being right and wrong, good and bad, how you ought to live. Yeah, so one of them is like a divine command theory that you know, the divine God has given us all these commands, and that's what dictates all of our right and wrong. Another one would be virtue theory, that virtue theory of ethics would say that we ought to be living a virtuous life. So there's these different theories of ethics, but when you take one of them and you go to apply it to a certain situation, that's applied ethics. What we're talking about today is applied ethics. And in a lot of what is happening in the fertility world, this would be applied ethics. They're taking the scenario, the real life scenario of, say, IVF, and they're applying a certain moral theory, ethical theory, to that real life situation. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I feel like this is already complicated. This is exciting.
I hope people are still here. Just kidding. And those moral theories can be all over the map.
Not all over the map. There's different ways of breaking down moral theories.
Okay. I would say that there's a lot of different people's opinions.
Yeah, there are a lot of different moral theories. There's not like hundreds of moral theories. There's maybe like 8, honestly, that are classically studied.
Okay.
But the chances are people don't know that they are just dealing with these issues in life, and they're maybe falling back on some things they've thought of, or kind of just going with their gut or common sense or something like that.
Okay.
So a huge issue in ethical theory and applied ethics is the concept of life. You don't want to unjustly take a human life. In most every theory and every applied ethical situation, you want to promote life. In most cases, people are trying to preserve, or maybe you could even say they're trying to preserve even the possibility of life. They're trying to preserve life and the possibility of life. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So murder.
Right.
What's that line from Guardians of the Galaxy? So what if somebody has something I want and I rip their spine out? Yeah, that's murder. One of the worst crimes.
Yeah. It's like, well, what if he has something that I want and I just want to take it?
Right. So murder would be bad. Right.
Right.
We know that. People are tried for that, convicted for that,
right,
punished for that.
Right.
All of the time.
Well, I would know, being a court TV addict.
That's
so
right.
Yes, exactly.
So when life begins is an interesting topic, because if life should be promoted in most, you know, in every ethical theory, life is important. And then all these different applied situations, you want to promote life. Knowing when life begins is an interesting topic, because that's when you ought to start protecting life. You know, it doesn't matter if someone's a day old or 5 years old.
Right.
If they have a human life, you ought to then be protecting it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So the very clear, obvious problem comes up of, when does life begin?
Right.
This podcast is not necessarily about abortion or anything like that, but the topic of abortion comes into play because people are making decisions about when life begins.
Right.
When is that a human life? When is it not a human life?
Right.
And then all of the very, you know, interesting conversations around that.
Mm-hmm.
This brings us to kind of a little bit of where we're at right now in the state of Alabama. They just made a ruling that they drew the line, and they said, human life begins at fertilization. So fertilized eggs, if you're coming from an infertility background, that wording might make sense to you a little bit. Egg, sperm, fertilized embryo. The state of Alabama said, well, that is a human life and it begins there. So there's been a bunch of implications that come off of that.
Right.
To be honest, chaos in the infertility world, right?
Yeah, yeah.
IVF clinics have some of them have halted even doing procedures, and they've stopped all their operations
in Alabama,
because the implications of that are huge, which we'll talk about a little bit. It just brings up this topic of, oh my gosh, when does life begin? Protecting life, promoting the possibility of life, all of that is a very important ethical thing. And now it is front page of the newspaper. And you might be struggling to get pregnant. You might be thinking through all of the different reproductive technologies. And you might be sitting there thinking, do I really have to make an ethical decision? Do I really have to know all about this? And it's at this point, I want to stop, press pause, and say, can we just have like a crying break for the fact that these poor people that are struggling to get pregnant are confronted with identity metaphysics right out the gate. How horrible is that?
Right. Wherever you are on that spectrum of belief.
Absolutely. It doesn't matter what you think about
it. You have to decide.
All of a sudden you're like, okay, oh, we've been struggling to get pregnant. We went to the doctor and they talked about these things and it's like, great. So what are your thoughts on identity metaphysics? Like, why do I have to do this?
Right.
And I just wanted to get pregnant.
Right, right. And obviously our doctor did not say that sentence.
In my mind, that's what
he said. But it is. It's the thought of like, well, what do you want to do with your embryos if you have multiple and you don't have them? And what do you feel like when life begins? Like, I remember we had the drive home of like, well, when do we think this is like begins? Like all these kind of conversations. Yeah. That's what you mean by that.
And that's what I mean. I would say it's an odd time to be confronted with this, like, when does life begin question? When you're in the midst of grief.
Right.
Stress.
Already hard. Yeah.
At times, like, you know, could be severe anxiety and depression. And you're in an office, kind of confronted with what to do. And then it's like, well, what are your thoughts about when life begins? Oh my gosh. That's a really tough time to have that thought.
Right. And I feel like it's not like you can be like, I'm going to take 6 months.
Totally.
I'm going to take six months. I'm going to think about this. I'm going to go to the Bahamas and sit on some beach and just think about all these things. It's like, no, it's like, okay, we'll get back to us next week with your decision. Not that you have to do that, but it feels like you do because time is not on your side. You know, that was my big thing. Yeah, I'm like, well, I'm not getting any younger. So I feel like it's like, of course you could probably go and process those things. But half the time, I remember we would go to appointments and you'd leave for work. So we couldn't even like drive home and talk about it. You know, so it's like, it's also hard to be confronted with that, but it's also hard to have time to sit and think about these big, big, in your words, ethical things.
Yeah.
You know,
I think a good parallel is war. Imagine you're at war, right? And the enemy has you pinned down and you are trapped in a bunker and the bullets are whizzing past your head and, you know, you're radioing in your position to try to get some air support and you hear the tanks rolling over the bunker. And then I come up next to you and I'm laying on the ground and I go, hey, what's your theory on just war? And you're like, what? Like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, the ethical implications of what we're doing here. Should we be taking these human lives? Is this just?
Right.
You'd be like, shut up. The hell up. Like, what are you talking about? I'm in the middle of a war here right now. You know? I'll be honest. That's what happens with people when they're looking into reproductive technologies and they're at the doctor's office. It feels like you're in an emotional battle for your own mental health and your own like health and, you know, it's overwhelming and stressful to say the least.
Yeah.
And then at that point you are confronted with, well, what's your theory on all of this? What's, you know, this is an ethical issue. What are your thoughts on it? I have no idea.
What's your thesis that you want to write thoughts on this subject? Like,
and that's why I wanted to do this podcast, to be honest, is because if we can just have a moment of knowing and thinking through some of the thoughts beforehand, that would be helpful. So to wrap our minds around how we got where we're at, I think this would be interesting. Do you want to do a little history of reproductive thought all the way going back from like the Greeks till now? I think I can do it fast. I promise it'd be interesting.
Sure.
Maybe I shouldn't ask Jesse that question.
Yeah, no.
She's looking at me like, I mean, do whatever the heck you want to do.
Keep it snappy. Keep it entertaining. Then yes. Just kidding.
No, I do. I do think this is actually really interesting from an ethical viewpoint.
Okay.
Going way back, the Greek philosopher Aristotle. I love Aristotle. I think he has
you're
a
lot his
of
number one fan.
I'm his number one fan. Actually, probably not, but I'm top 100 for sure.
Got it.
He observed a lot of human nature stuff. They had no idea how humans grew inside of people. They just literally didn't know. Their closest guess was that semen from the man and blood from the woman somehow created a baby inside of a person.
How long ago?
This is like a 300 BC around, I mean, around there, right? Like early Greek thought, right?
Okay.
So a long time ago, fluid from the man. They didn't even really have a concept of sperm. They didn't know what that was. It was just fluid from the man, blood from the woman.
Made a baby,
right? And then he said, after about 7 days, this thing that's growing in you has a vegetative soul, which is like the same type of soul that Aristotle would say plants have. So it was this like this kind of like this thing that was growing. And then after about 40 days, they said, okay, now it has a human soul. It's now a person, right? Inside of the person, right? Growing.
Okay.
It doesn't change for a really long time, like a really long time.
So this theory of liquid from men, blood from woman was the jam.
It was the jam for a long time. Going along with that, there is a guy named Hippocrates. He was also a Greek thinker, kind of a lot of the father of medicine, some people would say. He believed that the male soul entered into the person on the 13th day and the female soul on the 14th day.
Of course it's one day after. Of course it is. Where do they get these theories?
Which, again, we're not going to show our opinion, but right. I do think it's important.
Yeah.
There's a little caveat here. Men have thought of all of these things. So it's men deciding all of this stuff. So you'll see the fingerprint of honestly,
a male opinion.
And I mean this like not in any, hopefully any kind of controversial way, but of a patriarchal system throughout this thing. So
right.
Men on the 13th day, women on the 14th day. I mean, you could make the guess why they thought that.
Right.
It really stays the same until you get a guy, Thomas Aquinas. And Thomas Aquinas, he's a Christian. He's a doctor of the church, of the Catholic Church. And all he really does is add Christian principles to it. So it's the same exact situation. Fluid from the man, blood from the woman. And what he says is there is this kind of early soul that's developed, but then the Christian soul, the soul that's given by God is on the 40th day. So it's really the same exact situation. It stays the same all the way until the 1600s. So wow. I just want to like, we just got to sit with that for a second, right? For 1600 years, there it was such a mystery of what's going on. And religious teaching, you know, medical understanding, it's all kind of just shrouded in this stuff from this person, this stuff from this person, and then a baby grows. And then 40 days in there, it becomes a soul. You know?
And obviously they didn't have like microscopes.
No, they literally did not. Right. They literally did not have microscopes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is an important thing to mention because in the 1600s is when you actually start to get the idea of a microscope and looking, you know, for things that are very small. That's where you get a guy named William Harvey. William Harvey kind of moved the whole thing way forward. He rejected the idea that it's just fluid and fluid. He started to look for something called an embryo, something like an egg, something that's developing. But everything, again, was so shrouded in just confusion and mystery.
No science.
Yeah, there's science, just early science. It's just they don't have the technology, really.
Right.
Things from the 1600s all the way up until really the 1900s just slowly progress in understanding and understanding. The ethical implications of things don't really change until Pope Pius XI.
Who's that guy?
He's an Italian pope. He was an Italian pope. But he's the one who removed the distinction of ensoulment. He did that in the 1800s based off of the coming science from people like William Harvey, who are discovering something is happening on a much smaller level where you would say sperm meets egg. So Pope Pius XI says, you know what? No, we're not going to say that this whole, like the soul enters in at a certain time. We're going to say it's from the very beginning. And the reason the Catholic Church did that was they just chose the earliest possible thing that happens. And they called that conception.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. They would say in that opinion that the embryo is conception.
They just kind of said, well, whatever the first thing that happens, that's conception. Yeah.
Okay.
By the time Pope Pius XI is making that decision, what do they really know of what's happening? It's a little hard, you know, to put your finger on exactly right. what they know.
Very, that's very, very early science.
Very early science. Yeah. And then there's things that happen in the 70s and the 80s. And that's where you start to get IVF, like in the late 80s. The Catholic Church then, going back to that early distinction, just says, well, we're going to go with the first thing, because that's conception.
Okay.
And that's the scientific community kind of latched onto that too. And then it's changed throughout time. Then different religious communities have attached to that too, as well. So that's the history of how we got here.
Okay.
The distinction of ethics kind of comes in with new technology in the 1600s and the ethical view of conception of when life begins is placed on just the first thing that happens.
From the Catholic standpoint.
Yeah, I say the Catholic standpoint because they were such a dominant figure in like the 17, 1800s.
Right.
But I would just say that type of thinking very much so got carried through all sorts of things, through, you know, the scientific community, through the religious community, just even through popular community.
Right.
When they removed the distinction that you are ensouled at a certain period of a pregnancy, and they just said, well, we're going to place conception on the first thing that happens. That was a very powerful move, and it definitely influenced the conversation going forward. Going forward, I think at this point it's a very important thing to note that when you talk about the ethics of infertility, there are emotional issues and there are ethical issues, and confusing the two is not great. Well, it confuses them, right? There are some ways in which we emotionally approach wanting to get pregnant, and the way we talk about things and the way we feel about things that necessarily shouldn't inform our ethical decisions. And there are ethical decisions that shouldn't inform our emotions. Does that make sense?
I am spaghetti. Everything is informed by my emotions.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like that's like, women are like spaghetti and men are like waffles. Like they can compartmentalize easier. I'm not saying that for every single person that's a male. I'm just saying that's typically what happens. And I am spaghetti. Every decision I make is emotional.
Yes. But I'm saying, so imagine you've gotten pregnant, right? Or maybe you've just done an IVF retrieval, of eggs, and your embryos are now, you know, maturing, and you have four of them.
Well, let's take our,
we'll use ourselves. We had five maturing embryos.
For 5 days.
And there's an emotional way that you could approach that situation and say, these are my children. These are like, and you kind of emotionally attach to them, which is a good thing. And you are feeling all of these different feelings about them. That if you let those emotions affect your ethical view of what embryos are, that could be a confusing thing to pan out, if that makes sense. Because everyone's emotions can be different, and you may have a certain emotional feeling about them. This person might have a certain feeling about them, and then another person might have another feeling about them. And it can be a hard thing to
say in relationships, I'm sure too.
Yeah, it can be just the emotional attachment we have to things can be a difficult thing to create an ethical theory around. So it's best off kind of having a little bit of separation. Obviously, we shouldn't, you know, say I can't have those feelings because my ethical theory says that I can't. So that's what I'm saying. They shouldn't inform each other, right? We should allow our emotions to flow freely about what we're feeling. But we also should allow our ethical theory to be rich and informed and solid. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there are these two kind of worlds.
Yeah.
And I want to be very careful to set that up, because if you're trying to think through an ethical theory, we're only really talking about the ethical side of things. We're not necessarily going into the emotional side of things. So if we're going to say some people say they do not draw the line of life at embryos, and they don't think that embryos are children, you might be sitting there thinking, oh no, but these are my kids, right? And I would just say, is that your ethical theory or is that your emotions? Both are good. You need both.
Yeah.
But I think letting one completely dominate the other can just get a little messy.
Yeah. And are you saying like someone could feel that way towards their embryos and still believe that it's not life?
Yes.
But that's what I'm saying. Feel like so much hope for these embryos, or really wanting these embryos, or feel really attached to these embryos, but also have the opinion that it is not life.
Exactly. And I'm not trying to make an opinion statement or even try to like,
I'm not trying to do that either.
Like a judgment statement. I'm saying in terms of literally like being of like a very nerdy philosopher, you want to allow those two worlds to kind of be separate, is our emotional or feelings towards those things. And then a rich ethical theory principles about this certain thing based on a good theory. Does that make sense? They are two separate worlds.
Yeah. There also could be a person that believes that life begins as the embryo.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, obviously, if you probably think that, you're probably very emotionally attached to them as well.
Yeah, of course.
I guess I'm just confused of how you... I don't want anyone to think that...
Their emotions aren't valid.
Yeah. Yep. Or like, their emotions aren't valid, or like... I guess I'm asking for myself. How do you make non-emotional decisions? Like how I feel about things is my compass in life.
Right, right.
So how I felt about my embryos, it was really hard to think about them logically at all, whatever my opinion was.
Yeah.
If it was that I believed that they were life or that I believed that they weren't life.
Yeah.
Like it was just so hard because my emotional, like view my emotions as a car. They are the gas pedal steering wheel of my life.
Yeah.
Of how I get through life and go through life. So it's like, how does one stay emotionally invested? Because I think, and this is what I'm trying to think for our viewers too, because I feel like I'm listening to you say this for the first time and I'm like channeling their brain. And this is also for me. How do you do that?
How do you separate yourself?
No. I know, maybe you're not. So maybe that's why I want explanation. How do you separate yourself from the emotions to make that decision? Whatever it is, that it is life or it's not life. How do you, or maybe you're going to cover this and I'm getting too ahead of ourselves, but like, no, how do you do that for me? Signed, Jesse Brown.
Well, I think this is a good thing that we should stop on, because infertility feelings podcast.
Yeah.
What do you do with your feelings? How do you let them be a guide?
Because I think I would have to turn off my feelings towards them. I'm thinking of maybe the person who has the opinion that it is not life as an embryo.
Right.
But they feel very connected to those embryos.
Yeah.
I think it would be hard. And for me, I feel like it'd be the only way I could get to that point is that if I didn't feel towards those embryos anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that?
Well, I think what you're describing is actually what many people do.
I'm not even
trying to say it's the right or the wrong thing. I think many people
have that opinion.
And some people have
the opinion of that it is life.
Yeah. When they view their embryos, they think these are my kids.
Right.
But then when it comes down to making an ethical decision that maybe affects law, they would say, well, they're not technically kids.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think that it just shows right there that that is a valid stance that people do take.
And I think it's just, it feels like my kid. I don't know if they would have the opinion that it is my kid. I think it was like, but I have feeling like I was really attached to our embryo. And I know a lot of people that were attached to their embryos.
Yeah.
And we never really had to make any of these decisions because we only could do IVF once and we had five. And then by the end of day five, we only had one and then it didn't take.
Right.
So we actually kind of didn't have to be pressed up against some of these hard decisions because it was almost taken away from us.
Yeah. What I'm saying though, is that
I'm trying to highlight that this is hard.
Yes. And I think that should be the takeaway of this little section is that it is an emotionally impossible situation to be in.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what is important. It is hard. And there's not enough people acknowledging how hard it is.
Yeah. And emotionally hard for the person that does think that it's life.
Yeah.
That would be really hard if you thought that embryos are children and embryos are real breathing children. Like that would be so hard to know what to do with that.
I want to go back to what you were saying of perhaps the person who looks at their embryos and says, these are my children.
Yeah.
And then, but when it comes to make a law, they say, well, I don't believe that we can make a law that says they actually are children. I think what I'm saying is that it's okay to be in both of those stances. Do you know what I mean? It's okay to look at your embryos and say, these are my kids. And maybe you've gotten them genetically tested and you think like, this is my two boys and yeah. one girl. You know, it's okay to do that. Because I think from an emotional standpoint, you're valid in communicating that way and having an attachment like that.
Right.
I also think though, when it's time to make a law, which would be an a practical ethical situation about how to treat something like that, it's okay to say, I'm going to now make an ethical decision based off of my theory of ethics and, you know, practice it in this way, which then rules that my embryos are actually not children. I don't think that that creates in you a split personality kind of thing that's like, how could I say this and do this?
Right.
I think we as people are emotional creatures. We're fluid. We're moving. And I'm saying, I think a robotic view of life would say, yes, every single one of your ethical theories should match your emotions perfectly. But we're just not like that.
Yeah,
we're not like that at all. Human beings are not like that at all. We right. make decisions about how things ought to be, whether either legally or just even morally. And then we do the opposite all the time.
Right.
It becomes based on feelings and mood and stuff like that.
Right.
So I think we have to be, I think a mature version of ourselves is able to flex our muscles in each of those categories. I think that distinction needs to be made before you try to figure out where life begins at all.
Yeah. And I think maybe it's like the thing where I'm trying to think of myself, if I was in one of these situations where we had like an overflow of embryos, like what would we yeah. do or whatever? And yeah. to think about that, I think I would just have to make a space with you to try not to be emotional. Yeah. Whatever the answer is, whether you think they're alive or not, that's fine. But like really try to like take your emotions out of it. Like for me, I'm trying to think of myself.
I would not say to take your emotions out of it. I would
then
just say,
how do you do this?
I would say allow them to be present in that situation, but you're like allowing maybe your ethical theory to be in the driver's seat, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because
right.
it's okay to say, I'm making this ethical decision, even though I don't feel like it. You know what I mean? I'm making this decision, even though I feel like it's this, but I also know that this is how I view things ethically. And this, I'm making this decision.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't make you a broken, weird person.
I've never thought I was a broken, weird person, but just kidding.
Yeah. I just think I've seen people who want everything to line up perfectly. And I'm like, well, that can be tough.
What do you mean?
In terms of emotions to ethics, to logic.
Right.
I want it all to line up. You know, I logically think this and I ethically make this decision and I feel this way about it. It's like, well,
right.
I think you have to do a little bit of forcing to get it all to line up like that.
Maybe I'm sitting here perplexed with still a stomach ache. I'm just kidding. Trying to think about this for my own self. So thanks for bringing me here, Doug Brown, and forcing me to do this podcast for the last 6 months. And I was like, nope, nope. And then the Alabama thing happened. I was like, fine, we will. It's like a car. It's like, what's in the driver's seat? What's in the passenger seat? And what's in the back seat? And those probably move around all the time in other people's lives, not me. But no, that's what I think. So you're not saying to remove the logic 100%. And you're not saying remove your emotions 100%. You're just changing them around in the car of who's driving in that moment.
Yeah. To be appropriate to the situation that you're in, you know?
Yeah.
When you're, you know, sitting at night thinking about this procedure that you just did, thinking about these embryos you have, there is this sense of, oh, I'm emotionally in this moment. Now we have courtroom gowns on and we're in a marble building and you're like, well, we have to make a decision for the community about where life begins. It's like, okay, well,
yeah, it's hard.
Like who's in the driver's seat now? You know, I think it's okay
right.
to be allowing different people to be in the driver's
but
seat.
But it doesn't mean that the emotions aren't there. They're maybe in the passenger seat or the back seat.
Yeah.
They're not in the driver's seat. That makes sense. But then when you, but I'm just laughing of like that picture of being at night crying about your embryos or whatever. Yeah. Like, but it also, that is in the front seat in that moment. The emotions are in the front
seat.
And I would never want you to have me change into my logical
right.
driver's seat in that moment.
Right.
Like I want to be met in the emotion of that.
Yeah, that's interesting. That goes into probably other podcasts we have where maybe that's where I feel like if you try to line everything up perfectly, you kind of can get an emotional...
What do you mean? Like everybody's in the front seat?
No, like an emotional, I don't know, sticking point in a relationship.
Yeah.
It's if you're like, look, my logical, ethical side is in the driver's seat. no matter what.
Yeah.
And my passenger seat is my feelings, no matter what, you know?
Right.
So then maybe you have one member of a relationship is crying and kind of like feeling their emotions, and you come along and you're like, I don't know how to take my ethical, logical side out of the driver's
right.
seat. So, well, you know that this is this and this and this. And the person's like, this is not helping.
Right.
It's, I think at that point where you can go, let's sit in the emotions of it. Let the emotions drive.
And normally, typically, as I'm sitting here thinking, it takes me the emotional front seat for a long time until I can have my logical go in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
It's not very quick.
Right.
It's like, I have to be emotional. I have to process this. Then I can put the logical in my front seat.
So going forward, what we're going to do is look at different ways that you can define where life begins. As simple as that.
Okay.
You could think about it like drawing a line, right? If there's this continuum where you have egg and sperm on one side, and then you have like a teenager on the other side, draw the line where life begins, you know?
Right.
I think that's the difficult part, is from an ethical theory to applied ethics to courtrooms to living rooms, people are drawing a line somewhere.
Got it.
You know, and then disagreements about where they draw the line create all sorts of things.
Right.
You know? And I hope that you haven't heard in this podcast at all us drawing the line anywhere.
Right.
I think we're just talking about where different people have drawn the line.
Yeah.
So I think the first place you can draw the line would be at fertilization. Life begins at fertilization.
Yep.
It would be the first place that you could draw the line, right? I think even some people would define the first thing that happens when a sperm meets egg, like whatever that zygote sort of thing is. And caveat, Jesse and I are not doctors or scientists.
Hopefully they didn't need that caveat up to this point, because
I mean, you never know what people think.
What podcast episode are we on? Hopefully you didn't have to have that caveat, but yes, we
Jesse
are not doctors.
Jesse is a nonprofit guru genius.
Oh, please.
And I'm a philosopher. So please don't hear us talking about, if we mess up some of the science in this, please give us a little bit of grace.
Yes.
But I think many people do place that human life begins at fertilization. And there's a couple maybe positives or reasons why people do that. I think it does keep things clean philosophically and ethically.
We know people in our groups that don't do
certain treatments,
because they probably, I mean, I haven't blatantly asked them, but they probably believe that life begins at fertilization.
Yeah. And this would be kind of where you get some larger religions, like I believe the Catholic Church does draw the line there and say life begins at, what when they say conception, they mean fertilization.
And we're not saying that every person that believes in Catholicism thinks this
way. Yes, no, absolutely
not. But this is pretty obvious. The Catholic Church has come out and said this multiple times.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is not about kind of addressing that religion, but it's just that some people, obviously there's like, I think there's over like a billion Catholics in the world.
Right.
So clearly a large group of people, the leadership of that group has said that that's when life begins. So it is very clean philosophically just to say, well, the first thing happens. I think I'm not being opinionated in this statement, but I do think that that opinion of that, you know, that's them drawing that line does go back to the 1600s when you get some of those guys who discovered, oh, something more besides fluid is happening here. And Pope Pius XI removed that distinction that people are ensouled at 40 days. They just said, okay, conception's the first thing. And it kind of goes back to that. And they've stuck to that. I do think that there are also, though, some things that make this type of thinking difficult, right? There's good and there's difficult things and there's positive things for each one. In some way, in a common sense category, a single cell or double cell zygote in no way resembles a person, right? I mean, it's so small. For thousands of years, people didn't even know, right?
No opinion.
No opinion. It's just like you look at it and go, how could that be a person, right? It's interesting in terms of capacity that like an embryo, a fertilized egg, does have the capacity under the right circumstances to become a teenager, right? But you could almost think of it like an embryo in a lab has the same capacity for life as like a seed, like an oak tree seed in the, you know, International Space Station, right? Like they both definitely have the capacity for life, but in what capacity does it have the capacity for life up there? So that there's wiggle room there in terms of like trying to figure out what actually the capacity of life of an embryo is in a lab.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's all what this is? What is the capacity of life?
I think it's a huge part of what makes whatever the conversation
opinion,
interesting. Yeah.
Whatever opinion. It's like, that's really what you're doing when it boils down to it. Gosh, I sound like you. That it's just, it's the capacity for life. Where do you define the capacity of life? Am I saying that right?
Yeah. I mean, capacity for life is a huge part of what makes something important, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, does it have the necessary capacity to become life? I think then that becomes a very important thing.
Right.
If you draw the line of life at fertilization, you are, of course, saying it absolutely has full capacity for life. What we'll talk about next is some people draw the line at implantation and they say, well, it only then has the capacity for life.
Because it needs the uterus to survive, basically, is that thought.
That's that argument.
Way
yeah,
of thought.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think there one way of kind of disagreeing with this way of thinking is that you could say an embryo is a very special, unique thing, but it does not have, you know, the description of human being or human nature, but it is in a way a seed of life, you know, a thing that's unlike anything else, but it's not a human. So you could disagree and say that,
right.
Or you could agree and you could say, no, I do believe that human life begins here at fertilization. Just to talk about the implications of that, if you do believe that, I think something like IVF then becomes a little off the table.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, because I've heard our many fertility doctors that we follow and love have talked about if an embryo is a human, can you do things like genetically testing? Does that hurt it? Can you freeze it? Well, that you would assume that that would hurt it.
Right.
Is that
possibly hurt it?
Yeah, possibly hurt it. Yeah. So it makes all of the process of IVF. Almost want to say very difficult to do, if not impossible to do.
Right.
That is what you see in Alabama right now, right? That's why clinics have stopped. From an ethical standpoint, they're not saying, oh, you've made it all too difficult. They're saying, well, no, we want to, if this is a human life, we don't want to do anything that would hurt it, would violate its agency and violate its nature. So they've kind of pressed pause.
Right.
That's why all of the IVF community, all the doctors of IVF are advocating at such a heavy level to say, no, we need to think about this differently and protect IVF.
Right.
However, I mean,
there could be some people
I do want to say that there are people that say, well, no, I do believe that life does begin there. And I do not think IVF is a practice that we should be doing. There are people who do think that. I also want to say too, to be as accurate as possible, that there are people who do believe that life begins at fertilization that also do believe in the practice of IVF. Maybe there's a way of doing IVF or a certain sequence of the procedures and things that you can do that are cohesive with the belief that life begins at fertilization. So I hope that you don't hear me saying or hear us saying that if you were to hold this belief, then IVF is completely off the table, because I think that there are people who do in fact believe life begins at fertilization and IVF is possible.
Right. And I'm not saying that that people in our groups that have not done this, that they have that opinion.
Yeah.
We have had some people that, like, for religious reasons, moral reasons, whatever, IVF was just off the table for them. Or maybe just emotional. Like, that's fair.
Yeah. I hope that this doesn't get too opinion oriented, but I do think the people that I know who abstain from IVF for religious reasons are doing, it's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily they're like, they're not advocating at like a state level for anything. They're just saying personally, this is the way I view it. Yeah.
And I feel like the majority of people that I've actually met that have that opinion are very nice.
Yeah,
and they always say that I am not judging anyone for doing this. It's just what I think personally. And I remember we had people in our groups just say, like, I love hearing everybody's stories and supporting them. This is just a decision that me and my partner have made that we're not going to do that for whatever reason, moral, religious, emotional, whatever.
The next place you can draw the line of life would be implantation. And I don't know numbers here, but I want to say that this is where I think the majority of people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would place the line of life when an embryo is developing in the uterus. They would say, okay, now we have now we have a life.
Right.
And then depending on what they view human life, they would say this is now a human because it is developing in the uterus. it's less clear philosophically, but still not bad. You know, you kind of have these ingredients of sperm, egg, development, uterus, all of this implantations happening and things are developing. And you could say, okay, no, now we have life and we should protect it as it is life. It makes more sense, I would say, in the capacity position. You know, it's not necessarily a seed in space. It's a seed in the ground almost, you want to say?
Yeah,
and you said,
yeah.
Well, sure. Now there's definitely something happened. You know, from a non-technical viewpoint, you're almost like, hey, my hands are off.
Right. I have no control.
Yeah, I have no control. No one's doing anything. It's just doing its thing. So that's why I think a lot of people draw the line here. Mm-hmm. It's a little vague in terms of when you would say an embryo has implanted.
And you're such a philosopher. Like, what millisecond?
Don't worry. We'll talk about that next.
Oh, dear.
But I would say it is a little vague when something has implanted.
Yeah.
But I think if you go back to, you know, Aristotle, obviously that is archaic way of thinking.
Because that's what I do all the time.
But
back
from,
in Aristotle
from that
days.
Ethical viewpoint, it's like, you know, his viewpoint is something happens and then about 40 days in, we got a life.
Right.
I'm not advocating for anything. I'm just saying that is, you know,
One viewpoint
to say like, well, something is happening. There is this embryo that's implanting. And then, you know, by a certain amount of time in, we have a life.
Right.
The next thing that I would say is that you could say that people have this viewpoint. They have the viewpoint that grounding life is a vague concept.
So are you saying the next opinion? Is this the
yes,
next
this
opinion?
Would say okay. the next, I would say if you think the first opinion is life begins at fertilization. Then the next line or opinion would be, well, no, life begins at implantation. So I would say the third place that people draw the line is just they would say it's vague. It's just a vague concept. Yeah. The idea
the whole thing.
It's just vague. Just the idea of grounding life is it's just a vague idea.
Yeah.
And let me give you a philosophical problem. It's a kind of a fun one. Okay.
Okay.
Imagine, and if you're listening to this, wherever you are, a car, a boat.
A lot of people listen to us on walks.
I thought you were going to say a lot of people listen to us on boats.
Nope. I haven't heard one of those.
Maybe
no boat
maybe
rides.
Maybe you're walking your dog. Imagine this in your mind, okay, off to the side. Imagine you have a pile of sand, right? Or maybe you have only a few grains of sand. Or you could say rice. You choose the thing that you want it to be. You have this a few grains of rice. And I ask you, okay, tell me when you have a heap of rice, okay? When you have a heap of rice, you say, now I have a heap of rice.
I know where you're going with
and
this.
I keep throwing one grain of rice every second. When would you say that you have a heap of rice?
In my opinion, what my definition of a heap is.
Right. Well, you would just say like, okay, now it's a heap. And then yeah. I would go, okay, great. And then I reach over and I take one grain of rice when I go, now it's not a heap anymore. And you'd right. be like, well, no, I mean, it's still a heap. And then I take another one away, right? And I keep taking them away. Until I say, okay, is it still a heap? And you get this idea that there's like an arbitrary grain of rice in our mind that makes something a heap, which is kind of a problem in terms of thinking. Does that make sense?
Yes, right.
Okay.
Are you saying that could be a similar to this? Maybe not exact, but like similar. Like
Let me apply this to like a human. Say I have a teenager and I take, this is fully hypothetical, right? I have a teenager and I take one cell away from this teenager.
Okay.
Do I still have a human life?
Yes.
You say yes, of course.
Yeah.
And say we rewind that all the way back, all the way through, you know, pregnancy and all the way back till there's one cell left, right? And I'm just taking one away. At what point would you say I don't have a life anymore? You're almost inclined to say you have a human life all the way back till there's one cell. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Because how could just taking one cell away from this teenager ever make it not a human life? Then you reverse the problem, though, and you say, well, you have one cell, and you go, well, okay, I'm going to add one more cell. Do I have a human life? No, you're just one cell.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to add one more. And you get to a point where you've added enough that you now have a teenager, and you're like, is this a human life? And you're like, no, it's just vague. You get this idea of a vague arbitrary place where you're going to draw the line. So then you get people who come along and say, well, that's just a fallacy in terms of progression, right? A fallacy in terms of the vagueness, you know, is not a good excuse to say that we can't draw the distinction. So it'd be like, if you have someone who doesn't have a beard, a man who doesn't have a beard, and then you say, okay, at what point does he have a beard? You know, how do you make the distinction? Okay. okay, at this point he does. It's like, well, if I remove a hair, does he not have a beard? It's kind of the same kind of argument, right?
Right.
But the fallacy says, yeah, but we are people who can distinguish between someone who has a beard and doesn't have a beard. So there is a way to disagree with that heap argument and right. say, well, we can obviously distinguish when something is alive and when something's right. not alive. The problem is that when it comes to early life, I think some people just say, hey, it's vague. Okay.
Right.
It's vague.
Yeah. It's gray.
It's not black and it's white. Not here. It does say, you know, it's not true that this is life over here. It does seem to be true that it's life over here. And somewhere in between there, it happens. It's vague, you know?
Right.
I would say that vagueness, though, is an issue when it comes to making laws.
Right.
You know, I think it's fair that some people do draw the line at vagueness. I could see, though, if you're a lawmaker, that can be difficult to have a level of vagueness.
Because the law is supposed to be more black and white.
Well, you don't want to get into like the how to make laws and things like that. But generally, they're trying to make it something that can be stress tested and really used by a lot of people. So right. they are trying to draw a line.
Right.
They don't really want things to be vague.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It also is an issue for people who are looking for something concrete. So that's why I think you do get people who go, hey, to avoid the vagueness, we're just going to say the first thing that happens, that's conception. That's life, you know?
Right.
Because how do you say, well, no, it's the third day. You
know? Right.
Then you get the vagueness problem, you know?
Right.
Because or I think that's why you kind of get fertilization or implantation, because those are two markers
yeah.
that you can go, okay, now.
Right.
But there's a third category where people go, it's somewhere in there. You
right.
know, it happens.
Right. Which is probably a very popular opinion, I would think.
It's pretty popular, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The fourth one would be that people say life begins at a specific point in development. These are people who deny that heap problem.
Yeah.
They're saying, no, that's a fallacy, going back to the beard thing.
Right.
That's a fallacy of continuum. And that we can definitely determine when life begins. We just look at it, you
right.
know?
So these people would probably think like birth would be.
Yeah, from everything. There's people who say day 5, day 14, when we can hear a heartbeat, live birth, things like that.
Yeah.
They're just saying, no, we can know. Here it is. Heartbeat.
Right.
And they just make that decision.
Right,
you know?
Got it.
That is another way that people draw the life. That, in my opinion, those are the four.
Yeah.
Those are the four places that people are drawing the line of life. And you may agree with one of them.
Right.
You may disagree with all of them and
right.
you have some other kind of viewpoint. You may agree with one and disagree with three.
You're right.
I think the idea of this podcast is not for us to tell you where we think we should draw the line of life. It is to say that on an emotional level, this is what people are having to deal with
yeah.
who are going through infertility. They're having to look at this scenario and say, where am I drawing the line of life and what are the implications of that? I hope that even thinking through these four is helpful, because it maybe you can now know what to research.
Yeah. Hopefully it will spark great conversation.
My encouragement would be that I hope these four different categories, and there's probably more, but I hope these four different categories helps you think through even how you would approach this situation. I hope it helps in terms of conversation. And I hope mostly it helps you start to process your feelings about all of this stuff. Just to be able to categorize things so that you can begin to process and think through what you want to do, what you feel comfortable with, to have good conversations with the people you love, but to process and process and process. I think it also will help. It would help in terms of, I want to investigate. I want to investigate everything about this one category,
right.
you know?
Right.
And there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to research.
Yeah.
We're obviously here if you ever need anything.
And whatever opinion you have at the end of the day, you are welcome at the Uniquely Needed table.
Absolutely. I feel like the next 10 podcasts cannot be philosophical, or else people will revolt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we're going to get like 1 star on this podcast. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no. We've literally toyed with the fact of like doing like an infertility and humor podcast
yeah.
of like just the funny yeah. random things
we need it coming up pretty soon, let me tell you,
that we have heard. Yeah, because next one I think we're doing is infertility and grief.
Oh,
so
god, jeez, you know, it's okay, you know, it's a these are heavy topics, we got to dive in.
Yep.
But coming up pretty soon, we got to do infertility and humor.
Yeah, infertility and humor are something 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 to give us a break, because I mean I literally, it's like, if you have to like sometimes laugh because you could be literally crying like 90% of the time.
Yeah.
So, Sunday Smiles was literally born out of that thought. But yeah, I know. And just a little caveat, if we do infertility and grief this next episode or in episodes to come, just be in a safe space. That's what I would say. I'm prepping this episode right now and just be in a safe space. But if you're still here in infertility and ethics,
if you made episode, it this far into an infertility and ethics,
you're a
episode,
philosopher.
That's what it is. You have just graduated from the School of Philosophy. Great job.
And if you have any questions about this episode, it is doug@uniquelyknitted.org. So best of luck. Thank you for listening to the Infertility Feelings Podcast, a show produced by the nonprofit Uniquely Knitted. This is your place to process, cry, and laugh about infertility. We are so grateful for all of our amazing donors that we have who support our work. If you would like to learn more about how we serve the community and support the work of Uniquely Knitted, we encourage you to check out our website at uniquelyknitted.org. If you enjoy this podcast and would like more people to hear it, please give us a rating and a comment in Apple Podcasts. This is just the best way for more people to hear these conversations. If you need to talk to someone about your feelings and you are hurting, please reach out to us. We are here to help you. If you would like to learn more about our unique process groups and talk to Doug and I, please follow the link in our show notes. See you guys next week.